You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of January 10th, 2024, and we've got leftovers, and they're still warm.
Beefy. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
I'm George Albor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. We did our Game of the Year last week.
Mm-hmm.
We did our Gamey Awards 2 weeks ago.
Congratulations to those winners.
And even so, we weren't able to talk about all the games or the games at the right depth, even if we did mention their names. So every year we do a leftovers show where we talk about maybe some of the games that were not in our top three or that we didn't get to talk about, and we give them their laurels.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We call it the leftover show quiz, or maybe query.
Pop quiz hotshot.
Pop quiz hotshot. You baked cookies before Christmas.
Yeah.
So you can give them to your friends, family, have a little snackaroo before Christmas.
Yep.
How long do you keep those cookies after Christmas?
I mean, that depends on the cookie, because some cookies have a longer shelf life. But
how about just like your basic regular, you know, frosted
sugar cookie? That, yeah. Those motherfuckers will last like well into the next decade. Like you could eat those things indefinitely. A sugar cookie will last a very long time.
We had just gotten rid of the remainder of our leftover cookies, last weekend, basically.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not going to say I was outside eating a few cookies as I was tossing the rest in the compost, but as I was sampling them, I was like, hey, these are still good. And then I forced myself to compost the rest of them.
See, yeah. Cookies do not last long in our household. Like, we will go through sweets.
It feels like I need to institute some rule where, like, when we put holiday decorations away, we need to clear out holiday leftovers.
Yeah, that is the calling is, like, January 6th or whatever when they, like, come to collect your tree. Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
What were you doing on January 6th? Well, I was culling my holidays.
New Year. We still have some Christmas lights up, you know what I mean? We're trying to extend. What I noticed actually in my neck of the woods is because it is dark for so long and cold and miserable, I think people leave their lights up longer than people do in the Bay Area, where it's like, you know, January 10th, most lights are down. Right now, I would say most people that have Christmas lights up still have them up and still turn them on.
I think this year was a unique year because of just where the holidays fell. This is like very much still within the window. And I think, like, you know, for the super religious people, I think like the Epiphany is like this weekend or something. So, you know, like, I think people can justify it, but also the world is fucking dark and cold. So, like, yeah, leave those lights up, you know?
Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
Anyway, speaking of warm and fuzzy, we're going to talk about the video games that we really liked this year, but maybe weren't able to actually talk about in our Game of the Year. We'll each choose a handful.
Yep.
I feel like a lot of the games that were on my extended list, we touched on a little bit here and there, either from the gamies or from, you know, just oblique references. But how about you? Like, do you have any that are like totally like off the radar that you're mentioning, you know, for the first time now?
I mentioned a couple very, very briefly. And then there's one that I mentioned a long time ago that has stuck. Well, there's a couple. We talked about Chia, for example, which would be on the list. It's not on my list today because we already sort of revisited that, I think, during our gamies conversation.
Yep.
But I have another game like it that came out earlier in the year. People moved on, but it's a little bit surprising. Shall I share it?
Yeah. You go first.
That game is Remnants 2.
Oh, my God.
I
thought tonally you were going to go with something very much like Chia.
Oh, no. It's not. No, it's nothing like Chia. Remnant 2 is very good. This is I think I talked about it in like a What We've Been Playing conversation many, many months ago, and it hasn't really come up since. And I haven't played it really since I sort of finished it initially, despite there being some new content that has rolled out. But this is a beautiful melding and an evolution from the first Remnant of the Soulsborne style game and a shooter.
Yeah.
It is not oppressively complicated. It is quite simple in shooter parlance. Like, there's not a ton of crafting you can do, although there is some crafting. There's not a huge number of weapons, although there is a good deal of like weapon variety. Like, each of the weapons do something different. But there's a lot of customization in regards to how you build your character. Like, there's enough meat there to really dive deep into a quote-unquote build. One of the cool things about this game is when you start, you choose a class, and that class has a few different options for abilities, right? Like a secondary fire and an ultimate. Mm-hmm. As you play, you unlock more of those options, but you also unlock the ability to meld with another class and get aspects of both classes. And that dual casting idea, dual classing, is a really loved concept from D&D that people have been doing for years. It's a fun mental exercise to try to figure out, okay, well, how do I kind of min-max and build this character in a way that makes sense given what I have? And that shines in Remnant 2 beautifully. I built a character that was initially a healer, then I classed into a tank build as well, and then I found weapons that were like, okay, gives you shields and health when I'm in melee range, and so I sort of created a paladin, but a Remnant 2 version of a paladin, which is super fun, and it's a treat to hear about other people's builds as well. I also mentioned this before, way back when, but I love the idea that this game is experienced differently depending on your, not spawn, but like your world that you spawn in. So when you start the game, there's three separate worlds, and you could start in a different world than I start with. Huh. We can all see them, but each of our paths will be different. Then the worlds themselves will have separate bosses and some separate areas that will be different based upon your seed. And as a result, playing co-op is such a treat because you get to see aspects of the world that you wouldn't otherwise have seen. I remember when I first realized it, I was going into a boss fight with a friend, and I was like, okay, here's how we're going to fight this boss. Lo and behold, completely different boss. I had no idea what was going on, and I had to adapt as a result. I really enjoyed that quite a bit. The world building is awesome. There's a Bloodborne level that just shines and captures how awesome Yharnam is in all the same ways. I think it's a huge achievement. And I think if it had come out later in the year, or maybe if more people had played it, I think it'd be more in the conversation. But I think it's a really solid game. So definitely was high on my list.
Am I under the correct impression that there's kind of... there's kind of a loot aspect to it, like almost a Diablo thing where like you're trying to get certain drops by doing the run, like a runs over and over again to like, you know, see if you can get a certain type of weapon or whatever.
Kind of. It's not random like that. It's not really a looter shooter. It is much more discreet. Like if you do X and Y, you will get that weapon. If you defeat this boss, you will get that boss weapon. It has boss souls that are craftable into weapons, just like in Bloodborne or Dark Souls. The difference, though, is not all of the bosses spawn in your world. So if you want to get that, you either need to play it again, or I think maybe you can access it in multiplayer. I can't recall that specifically. Yeah. But the result, though, is it's a lot easier for you to say, okay, I want to make a particular build. Mm-hmm. I'm going to look up online how to find the elements that will make that build shine and then work towards that progressively rather than just crossing your fingers and hoping for good luck.
I feel like this is one of those games, kind of rare, like a rare type of game that is, you know, it's not a God of War scope and budget game, but it's not a two-person indie game. Like, this is like, it feels like this is one of the interesting middle-ish ground games that came out.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. It is right there in like the double A shooter space, not triple A. Yeah. I think that's really great.
Nice.
Yeah. How about you?
Let me throw one out here. This is one that I...
And these are in no particular order. Like, these aren't ranked. Yeah.
Exactly. No ranking of leftovers. All good. All goes on the same plate. Another leftover hack. All on the same plate. All on the same plate.
Mix it up.
All in the microwave.
Just like a tasty slurry.
I have continued playing Sea of Stars. Talked about that a couple months ago or so.
I'm really excited to play this game. I'm right now I'm playing Octopath Traveler 2, and I just can't handle two RPGs at the same time. But
it's a lot. It's a lot for sure. I think I'm getting towards the end of it. But you know, it's a pretty sizable game. You know, probably a couple dozen hours or something like that, which you know is a lot. But I think the format of it is good. And again, this is one of the I remember when we talked about this because it's it has a game within a game mechanic in it, you know, like Triple Triad or whatever, or Blitzball.
Yeah, yeah,
Or Gwent, yeah. And I have definitely spent at least a couple hours sitting on the couch watching TV and playing Wheels, which is the in-game game from Sea of Stars. So you could probably go through it faster if you're not addicted to Wheels.
Oh, God, yeah. But I'm the type of person that will succumb to those minigames.
I love it. I wish Wheels was a standalone app on the phone. Like it would prevent me from doom scrolling for sure if I could play Wheels on my phone.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've continued to like it quite a bit. There's the battle system it's not complicated, but it's refreshing in a way where, you know, it's actually reminds me a little bit of Octopath Traveler, where it challenges you to think about your actions so that you basically break the sequence of the enemy's attack, where it's like, well, I could do my most powerful attack, but if I do these other three elemental attacks, it's actually better because I'll break the turn of the enemy and get an extra turn. You know, like there's just a little bit more than the one person attacks, then other person attacks, then you attack again type of back and forth.
Yeah.
Which I think is really cool. They do a good job with it. They do a pretty good job of scaling things, because you don't really, there's not a lot of like grinding for levels in this game, and yet the battles have to still be challenging, or else, you know, the game wouldn't be as engaging. And so they do a good job kind of leading you through it in a very similar way that Chrono Trigger does, where there's not a huge amount of grinding in Chrono Trigger. It's more just like, you know, figuring out the tactics that have to evolve to get past, you know, each stage of the game, which is very similar. And then again, like, you know, like Chrono Trigger, there are major character moments in the game that, had this game come out, you know, when its inspirations had come out, kind of like Chrono Trigger, would be like, holy crap, like that's going to happen now? Like that totally changes the nature of the entire party, or that character is totally gone now, or this is like a brand new thing. And so they're just taking a lot of inspiration from kind of what the Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasy VI era stuff did in the RPG space.
Big swings,
And the music is incredible. I need to look up who did the music, because I wouldn't be surprised if they got someone from that era, because it's so era specific. It's a great soundtrack, and I think I'm almost done. Stop me if you heard this one before, but I found another continent that's floating up in the sky, and it's
hell
like,
yes.
Okay, here we go. Yeah. I've been really liking it quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm really excited to play this game. I've thought about just putting Octopath Traveler down, but I know that if I do that, I will never pick it up again.
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting. That's a leftover I'm gonna get to, I think, this year.
Totally.
Cool. I'll hit you with another one. Also talked about a little bit on the podcast, but not something that we've revisited a lot since, and that is Dredge.
Oh, yeah. I got to play this. I didn't even touch it.
Oh, it's great on the Steam Deck in particular, so I'd strongly recommend it. If you are still unaware as to what Dredge is, this is a fishing game, but it very quickly becomes more than a fishing game. While you at first start off like, okay, I got to find some fish, when night falls, all of the sort of fucked up Lovecraftian horrors come out of the ocean. You find fish that are mutated and have multiple eyes. Sometimes you cut them open and you find like cursed items and just bizarre things. There's like a little world, right? And different biomes that you can take your boat to. And you have this tiny little rickety boat. And no matter how many times you upgrade it, it always feels like you are on the cusp of being in too deep, which fits the sort of vibe, the horror vibe that the game is trying to create. It's a really, really cool experience to play this game. And I think it's a great example of the way that theme can really just push a game over the edge. Because if you were to, you could change Dredge's theme probably quite significantly and still have a perfectly competent fishing game. It's the extra layers and the way that once that theme is unlocked, it kind of, you find its presence everywhere that makes it really hum. So this was a great game. I don't think I finished it actually. So it's something maybe I should go and revisit. But I think for me, so many of the games that were my favorite games of the year are those vibe games, like the ones that evoke just a cool theme or sense of the world. I talked about Venba a little bit, for example, I think during our gamey conversation. That's another great vibe game, right? But Dredge is it's not the happy feely, what's it called? Cottage core vibe that I think a lot of people enjoy from their games. It's much more the sort of unsettling dark atmosphere vibe, but for a fishing game, very, very good. Strongly recommend.
Can we talk about the other fishing game of the year, Dave the Diver?
Yeah, we did talk about it on the show. I don't think we did like a dedicated debrief. So I have a list of like, I think 7 or 8 games that I'm like, okay, maybe I'll pick. Dave the Diver's on there too. I mean, again, another awesome fishing game. I think Dave the Diver probably overshadowed Dredge in a way.
Yeah.
Even though they're not really the same kind of fishing, you know?
No.
But
did you finish Dave the Diver? Like, you just did credits or whatever?
I did. It's a very long game. And there's more content after the credits. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, I fell off of it, and I've been having a hard time re-onboarding, basically. And so I'm wondering if, I don't know, like, I've kind of gone back and forth on that game because I really liked it while I was playing it. But then something must have diverted my attention. And then it's like, well, I didn't have as much staying power as I expected. So I was wondering how you ended up with it. But it sounded like you finished it.
I did finish it. There was a moment where I realized, like, holy shit, this game goes on for so long. Right. And so I just pushed through. Which isn't to say it overstays its welcome, although maybe that is the case. There's just a lot of game in this game, right? It's why it was a gamey contender. And so I think being patient with it is kind of necessary if you want to see it through to its end. What I will say, though, is this is kind of like a lighthearted comedy game. It doesn't want to take itself too seriously. I'd recommend you don't take it too seriously either. And so it's perfectly fine to not see credits in Dave the Diver.
Right.
I think that's okay.
Embrace the chillness of it.
Yeah, embrace the chill, you know, have a laugh when you have the opportunity. And then if you feel like you can revisit it, or you've got the time or something, like, go for it. But
yeah, cool. Let me throw out a game that I think is a very high quality, but I played, I would say, like, a respectable amount to get a taste. Street Fighter VI.
Nice. Yes. This was one of a lot of people's favorites lists.
I mean, I think it's just an extremely well... Again, I'm such a Neanderthal when it comes to fighting games because I, you know, or I don't know what else, like, you know, cigars or wine or something or cheese, where it's like, I know what seems good and expensive, but I'm not really qualified to hold forth on exactly why. But I mean, this game just seems like they really thought long and hard about what the next evolution of Street Fighter was supposed to be from both a single player and a multiplayer perspective. And I was just really impressed by all of the stuff that they put together and like the way that the characters interacted and even the, like the new control scheme that they're messing around with. Like, I just think there was a lot of interesting innovations that they did with the game and with the franchise in general. And was super impressed. And it's one of those games that will probably never be in my top three because I just don't, I'm not well versed enough in fighting games.
Yeah.
But this was like the closest I've gotten for a long time, in really like latching onto one. And it came in a year where MK also came out and it diverted my attention fully from MK. Like, I didn't even play the Mortal Kombat game this year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. I know a lot of people fell in love with this game. I'm like you. I'm not a serious fighting game fan at all, so it'll probably never be on my docket, but I was really enthused to see that Street Fighter maintains relevancy and tries things that are quite new and exciting to be more accessible, you know, because if folks like me ever need to be convinced, you know, we need avenues in, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I will pick another one that I talked about probably quite a bit in depth, but I do want to shout it out because it was very close to being in my top three. It was just edged out after a lot of heartache and and internal controversy, and that is Lies of P.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Any other year. Can you imagine? Any other year.
I mean, if for real. For real. You know, I described this game as a blatant ripoff of Bloodborne, but it is a loving one, right? Like, this is a very loving tribute to not just the franchise, but that particular game, right? This isn't just a Soulsborne that has been sort of plugged in here. This is someone that took the, again, the vibe, the feelings that Bloodborne evokes and wanted to create it here. They chose Pinocchio, of all things, as their source material. And by God, it fucking works. Like, there's actually genuinely interesting narrative space to explore with the idea of what makes us human versus, in this case, kind of like a robot, but you know, rather than like a wooden boy, right? The idea of lying to become more human and what that entails with the NPCs, I think, is super interesting. And you could just talk about the simple idea of you are a robot and you face other robots and different parts are interchangeable. And it just makes sense as a Bloodborne style weapons transforming mechanic. And it works really well. The boss fights are super cool. They're massive. There are enemies that look like fucked up dark carnival punching bags that are enormous. There are enemies that are really quick and fast and agile in the way that, you know, Lady Maria or something might be from Bloodborne. And I think it has learned so much. And it's really cool to see a group of developers be so inspired by and so informed by a game that they can execute at close to the same level of excellence. And for that, I think Lies of P deserves a lot of praise. We talked about how ludicrous the ending is. Minor spoilers, but it hints at a Wizard of Oz connection. Like, Dorothy is going to be one of these people. But man, like, I think that this is a franchise that can work. Like, I think that a shared universe with Dorothy as the next protagonist and you're fighting, like, weird flying monkeys and we've got, like, another Bloodborne world that's tinged with the Wizard of Oz could be really neat. And I could see them doing the same thing with Alice in Wonderland and all the other available IPs. I guess Steamboat Willie's available now, so, you know, go to town.
I was just going
to
mention that. I was like, you know what's fallen into the public domain.
I think it can genuinely work because there's enough there, you know, and almost like, what is it, McGee's Alice in Wonderland, like... It works beyond just let's tweak it and make it dark, right? I think they found what works here. So I'm excited to see what they do next. I think Lies of P is super solid. And I think if you are someone that loves Bloodborne or even Dark Souls and Elden Ring, I think it's a game worth checking out because it's kind of like Alan Wake 2 in a way. It's interesting to see how someone else takes on the project that is building a game like this. We have a lot of Soulsborne-like games, but very few get this close to touching that degree of perfection and excellence.
Did it come from a developer that had a long pedigree?
No, not at all. And that's kind of been the story this year, I think, from a lot of different studios. Dave the Diver's the same. I'm always surprised how some smaller studios without a huge list of games that are like this jump into a different genre and find success. Yeah.
An unscientific search query yields a list of potential new public domain works that can go into the sequel of Lies of P. It looks like The House at Pooh Corner has fallen into the public domain at this point.
I think, honestly, the 100 Acre Woods, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
I think that could be really fucking cool as like a Bloodborne setting.
The murderous 100 Acre Woods.
Yeah, like a dark, creepy woods.
Tarzan.
That could work, yep.
Yeah, Tarzan, Lord of... that book, Millions of Cats. Have you ever read that one with your kids?
No, no.
I think you would find it horrifying, because I remember we talked about this. There was a book that you all had and our kids read, too, when our kids were together, where there's, like, just a million monkeys or
yes,
something.
Yes, yes. Dum diddy dum diddy dum. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. This is very similar, where there's... It's literally called Millions of Cats, and this guy... is like inundated with millions of cats. He's kind of like yeah. Pied Piper, but for cats. So you got some swarm mechanics there.
I mean, of all thing. The ones that you've said, none of these sound more ludicrous than Pinocchio.
I know. That's you know what I mean? Like, yes. Oh, man. All right. Let me take a look here if there's any others. There's a couple others that I should mention. I've talked about this game quite a bit already, but and you actually predicted it for my top list, so I should shout it out again. But I think Cocoon was a great game this year. Any other year, Cocoon would easily be a top three contender. And I'm just so happy to like a game from one of the lead designers from Playdead.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Because usually I was like, I'm like a negative critic of Limbo and you know, some of the other games that studio has made, but this one I really the realization of what they were going for in terms of the simplicity and also just how smart the puzzles were, I still think about that game, and it was fun playing it with the kids too, because my son is at least old enough to now understand, you know, the second or third order thinking to do some of those puzzles. And it was fun just kind of like messing around, trying to figure it out together.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I'll toss in another puzzly game, Viewfinder. I don't know. Oh, did you play this yet?
It looks so cool. It's one of the ones I never played, but I saw some of the stuff and like the gimmick of that game, and it just looks so awesome.
Yeah, I don't think that it stretches its legs enough. Like, if Dave the Diver is too much game, Viewfinder feels slightly not enough, but it is a really cool, clever mechanic, and I feel like there's a lot of games like this that come out each year with something unique, or like the physics just sort of bends your mind, but they don't tend to stick the landing for one reason or another. I think Viewfinder does stick the landing. I think it's thoroughly entertaining to try to puzzle out and figure out how to approach the challenges that they make. And they add enough of them that it keeps you interested. It could stand to be more. I think there could be a lot more Viewfinder content, but I think that's another good one from this year that I really enjoyed.
Nice. I'll do one more, and I'll do maybe this will become a tradition, but I'll throw one in there that isn't even from this year. That just was like in my rotation the whole year, and especially at the end of the year when I had some downtime. Man, I need to stop playing this game because it just releases the right chemicals in my brain. But
Vampire Survivor?
Oh, I mean, for sure I'm still playing Vampire Survivor, but like, you know, like 100%. But there was another one. By the way, we didn't even talk about Vampire Survivor, but they have continued to put content in that game.
Oh, really?
There's like an adventure mode now that gives you like specific tasks and like a little story that goes along, and you're trying to complete objectives. They put multiplayer into that game.
Oh, sweet.
They're taking the No Man's Sky approach to expansions in that game. It's nuts. But yeah, I've definitely been continuing to play Vampire Survivor. But the thing that I fell back on kind of in the last third quarter of the year or so is Into the Breach.
Oh, nice. Wow. Deep cut.
I was thinking about Into the Breach, and you know what we should do, maybe, I don't know, in a year or two, or maybe whenever we want to do it. But if we did a tournament of champions of the George Orwell Award for achievement in elegance, Into the Breach would be a heavy contender for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that game is just a clockwork puzzle it's just a masterpiece. And just the way that all of those mechs differ from each other, but you know, all have valid strategies, and it's just, I just really, really like that game. And now it's everywhere, you know, like Into the Breach is on my phone now. It's like, definitely a Steam Deck game that I play all the time. I haven't exposed to the kids to it yet, but like, I feel like it's one of those like Because it's such a scoped strategy game, you know. It's a, like, I don't even know what the grid is, like 8x8 or something like that. Like I forget what it is, but like it's such a small but deep game. And I just I'm always gonna go back to that game, and I have put a lot of time into it, especially at the end of the year here.
I'm really impressed that you were able to find time in such a packed year to revisit something like that.
Oh man, it's just so good. I mean, I'm really trying to. I'm making a concerted effort to basically not doom scroll the news. And so,
yeah, smart.
I'll either have my phone totally in the other room, or if it's close to me, it's like, if I'm going to pick up my phone to distract myself, if, you know, we're potentially, you know, have background TV on or whatever, you know, like when I discovered Into the Breach was now on mobile, I was like, okay, that's the thing that's going to keep me out of the, you know, the news spiral. Like I can just engage my brain on something that's actually useful and using other parts of my brain instead of just the dopamine hit. So it's been very cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. I wonder what game I'm going to read. Actually, you know what? I think it's fun to try to think about what games from this year I'll revisit for next year.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I played any like really persistent games like that or multiplayer games like that. I did just recently pick up Lethal Company. So maybe I'll give that a try and stick that around.
You know what game we should revisit actually is they put out the roguelite mode for God of War Ragnarok.
Yes, Valhalla, right?
Yes.
Yes, I and just I downloaded that yesterday. I haven't
even booted it up yet, so yeah.
On my list.
Yeah, I mean, again, what a weird choice to just put out a what seems to be a very sizable update to a single player game that just is a free update, but like I'm not complaining. Like it sounds kind of like a huge budget Hades.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a free update too. Like that sounds great, and it's narratively connected, so really cool.
Cool. Any last things to throw in there? Or are we good?
I think that's it. Yeah, there was a lot of good games this year. The list could go on. We talked about some of them in the gameies. I think I mentioned a Highland song. I think that game's really good. One more that's a good quick one. Shout out. But yeah, I am excited for the coming year. Next week, we are doing the year ahead.
The year ahead. Yeah, we'll already have a little bit of insight into what's going on.
This we'll year, Hollow Knight, Silk Song. This is the year. Believe it's going to happen.
I think we should also do, because last year was so wild with hardware announcements too. We could probably take a look at what's on tap for hardware and see if there's anything that we're looking forward to, because I know there's some things out there.
For sure.
I think there'll be like a fair amount of games and device type stuff to talk through. So I'm excited to see that stuff.
Yeah. Sweet.
Cool. All right. We will leave it there for this week. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is where you can find us. You can listen to all of our podcasts wherever you find them. Spotify, iTunes, Pocket Casts, all that good stuff.
The back of the refrigerator.
Smell it. It's still good, baby. It's still good. Experience Points ages like a sugar cookie, which is to say, not at all.
All right, everyone. As always, thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Ciao.